Mr. Freelands.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. There's a line drawn across the state of Mississippi, an arbitrary line, that divides the school children of that state into two classes. The school children in the southern 59 counties of Mississippi receive the entire income from the federally created school lands trust in our state, while the school children in the Chickasaw Section, the 23 counties that we represent, receive not a nickel of this trust income, but instead a pittance in the form of an annual appropriation which the Mississippi legislature may or may not make each year.
Could I ask you right now, do you claim that it's contrary to federal law or the Constitution for the state to allow this school land money to be allocated to the counties in which the land is? Do you think they must administer for the state as a whole and distribute it equally?
I think it is contrary to federal law, Justice White, for them to do as they are doing. In other words...
Well, that doesn't answer my question.
I think it's contrary, yes, to answer your question in a word.
Good. And so you think they should take the total trust income from trust lands and divide it among the counties in accordance with the number of students or some other neutral standard?
I think that they could do that as part of the relief that we seek, yes.
Well, I know, but you... But I thought you said that it would be contrary to federal law to let the counties in which the land is located have all the money generated by that land.
Not precisely. What I said was that it's contrary to federal law to allow all of the trust income to go to 59 counties and at the same time, none of it to go to the 23 that we represent.
Well, suppose there wasn't this Cherokee land involved at all, that every county in the state had that section of land or whatever it was, those sections of land, but that those lands in the different counties produced different income, different levels of income.
Sure.
And some counties from the school land would be getting X dollars per a child, and other counties would be getting one-tenth X per child. Now, would that be permissible?
Well, in the first place,
would it be or not?
Yes, indeed it would be. And that's the situation that does, in fact, exist in lots of states where the state has not done as it
has done here. So you do not attack allocating the income to the counties in which the land is located?
As a matter of fact, the language of the trust says that that's what's to be. In other words, the land is to be maintained for the benefit of the township in which the land is located. But we've gone beyond that in Mississippi.
I understand.
That's my point.
Mr. Freeman, I'm not sure I understand the facts. My understanding was that the counties you represent were owned by an Indian tribe, and when the United States government took that land over and sold it, they gave the proceeds to the state of Mississippi. The state then invested the proceeds in bonds of a railroad that went broke during the war between the states. Is that correct?
No, Justice Powell.
That's incorrect?
That's incorrect.
All right, tell me what the facts are.
All right, what happened was this. First of all, the entire school lands trust was created at one time in 1817 in Mississippi's Enabling Act and then the Land Sales Act. The Land Sales Act provided that the 16th section lands were to be retained throughout the state in trust for the schools. Then in the sale of the lands in what's called the Chickasaw Section, the 23 counties that we represent, rather than retain the lands in trust as was supposed to be done, they sold them and gave the money to the Indians and not to the state.
Well, the United States government did that, didn't it?
That is correct. And, of course, the United States government, realizing what it had done, subsequently passed a statute that said we're going to give the state 177,555 acres of new lands to replace these lands that we wrongfully, if you will, sold to the Indians. Now, thereafter, after this happened, the state of Mississippi first leased these lands. They're in the Mississippi Delta, some of the richest farmland in the world. They leased these lands. And following that, the Congress in 1852 passed a statute that said you can now sell the lands, provided you retain the funds, proceeds of the sale and trust for the schools, or as an alternative, you can lease the lands. But if you do sell the lands, you've got to get the permission of the counties where that would benefit from the lands in order to do so. Of course, the state never did do this. In 1856, the state comes along. First in 1854, they gave away the reversionary interest in the lands. They had lands leased for 99 years. They said, we'll give you a fee simple title for no additional charge, which they did. This is Delta land. Subsequent to that, in 1856, the state said, okay, we've got something over $1 million in a fund in the state treasury. They, by statute, converted that to the use of the state and put it in the general fund and spent it just like they would any other money in the general fund. In other words, the trustee either gave away the corpus of the trust or converted it. Now, the same statute that you're referring to, I believe, does talk about lending money to the railroads, a highly speculative venture in Mississippi in 1856, but that was done after the money was converted to the use of the state. No, as a matter of fact, if you read the statute, I believe they put about $400,000 of it into the railroads, incidentally, that had no rolling stock, had not been built, and to add insult to injury, were in South Mississippi and not in North Mississippi, where our 23 counties are.
And no suit's been brought against the state in all the years that have passed since then?
Until this day.
Yeah.
Mr. Freeland, I assume, as far as you're concerned, that we could take judicial notice of the matters in the public record, such as the annual report of the Superintendent of Public Education to the state legislature from Mississippi?
Certainly, Justice O'Connor. I certainly hope the court will do that.
And in looking at that report, it appears that there are other state funds that go toward the pupil costs of public education in the state of Mississippi, other than the 16th section and Lulands revenue.
What now is the court referring to general appropriations, or are we talking about
appropriations that go to the costs of public school education?
Aside from the school lands trust?
Yes. Aside from the 16th section lands and the Lulands revenues.
That's precisely correct.
What percentage of the funds per pupil, would you say, comes from other funds, local, state, and possibly federal, other than these monies you're worried about, the Lulands and 16th section?
May I illustrate it in dollars?
Sure.
In dollars, in the Chickasaw session, 63 cents per student. Money is in lieu of trust funds prior to 1985. Outside the Chickasaw session, $75 per student.
Well, my question goes to what other revenues go toward public school education. Those figures, of course, are in your brief, but the other figures are not.
The fund represents, outside the Chickasaw session, approximately 20% of the total school funds available to the schools in the state of Mississippi. This is outside the Chickasaw session. That's less teacher salaries. In other words, these are basically used as discretionary funds. So if you discount teacher salaries, the fund represents approximately 20% of the total school funds available in the state of Mississippi.
State, local, and federal?
I believe that's correct.
All money, state, local, and federal.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's correct. I'm not positive of that answer, but I believe that's correct.
I share Justice O'Connor's concern. Don't you end up in a situation where the children in the Chickasaw session lands get about the same overall as those in the southern part of the state?
Justice Black, that is precisely our complaint. They do not.
I get the other impression from looking at the facts here, but go ahead, explain why.
No, they certainly do not. In other words, against a little better than 60 cents per pupil in the Chickasaw session prior to 85. In the rest of the state, $74.
I know you say that, but we're asking overall, with all other funds available, what is the answer?
The answer is the same. That difference is not made up with these other funds.
But what order of magnitude are we talking about? Is a correct interpretation of your answers to Justice Blackmun, Justice Blackmun, that about 80% of the public funds from everywhere in Mississippi come from sources other than these Lowlands?
Outside the Chickasaw section, that is correct.
And how much comes in the much more than 80%, perhaps approaching 100%?
No. In the Chickasaw session, less than 3% because of the amount of monies that we get. In other words, again, you're talking about a difference. And
Counsel, what we're interested in is what is the disparity when you add all the figures together of all sources for public education? What is the disparity between the southern part of the state and what you refer to as the Chickasaw section? Is it roughly 100% to 80%?
It's, if I've got my mathematics correct, Justice Rehnquist, it's roughly. I would say that would be correct.
And is it your position that the 80% funding does not give a minimally adequate education?
It's our position that the lack of a minimally adequate education, and as the court understands, we're here on a 12B6 motion, is the effect of the denial of the rights that we claim under this trust and not the cause. The cause, we say, is the denial of these rights under this federally created trust.
And you say that the absence of the session lands revenues makes the difference between a minimally adequate education and not.
That is correct.
Mr. Freeman, I'd like to go back to the fundamentals. Do the localities have the primary responsibility for financing public education in Mississippi? The localities?
I would say not. The state.
The state has?
Yes.
Is the funding of public education the largest single item in the state budget?
That, I believe, is true.
I think that's true in most states. Now, I get back to the question you've been asked several times. Is that allocated on a per-pupil basis?
Average daily attendance, I believe.
Average daily attendance. Is that fairly done across the state, including the counties you represent?
We have no complaint about that.
None whatever.
That's not the issue in this case.
And what percentage, again, I ask you, of the funds in these counties comes from that state appropriation? Did you say 80%?
I'm not positive of that figure, but I would say that would be approximately correct.
You said it was
80% in the South.
In the South, and it would be higher than that.
It would be. No, I thought you said about 97%. That only 3% of the money came from the Lowlands.
The 3% was trying to compare what we get from the Lowlands. It's actually less than that, Justice White.
What percentage in the north part of the state is comparable to the 80% in the south? What would that figure be?
The percent that we actually get from the state?
Yeah.
The funding is basically the same. How I would break it down.
But the percentage.
Well, let me say this first. We are not attacking school funding in Mississippi as a general proposition. That's not our lawsuit as we view it. Our lawsuit as we view it is simply this trust created by the federal government is being violated because our clients or the schools that they attend, I should say, are not getting their rightful share of trust income. That's the basis for our lawsuit. Now, as far as the overall school funding of the state of Mississippi is concerned, that's not the thrust of our lawsuit in the least.
And so far as you claim a violation of the trust, that really occurred over 100 years ago, didn't it?
Not the violation that we're suing on, no, Justice Rehnquist. The violation that we're suing on is the violation that occurs each year when this trustee, who either converted the trust corpus or gave it away, and owes us a continuing duty.
Well, but that's that's the way everybody tries to get around the statute of limitations, is to say, well, this didn't just happen in 1868. It's a continuing offense. But a lot of courts reject that as kind of phony.
This court has said that where there is a trust and the trustee converts the corpus of the trust and thereafter continues to admit, as the state of Mississippi has done in this situation, that the duty is owed to continue paying income, that the statute of limitations doesn't run. The only way the statute commenced to run is if the trustee repudiates the trust, which the trustee didn't do. It didn't say the trust was void.
But the trustee doesn't admit of any greater duty, obviously, than to pay the income from the substituted funds.
That's another point. There is no substitute fund. It's entirely mythical. The fund of something over $1 million was arrived at simply by taking 177,555 acres and multiplying it by $6. The fund doesn't exist and has not existed since 1856.
So the legislature simply appropriates what would have a hypothetical income on that fund?
For years, they appropriated first 8%, and starting with 56, then they dropped it to 7, then in the Constitution of 1890, they dropped it to 6%, which amounted to something over $60,000 per annum to be divided amongst 23 counties. And then in 1984, they came back again and said, we know we violated this trust. We know we should do something about it.
But the only reason that the northern counties are treated any differently than the southern was the bad investment during the Civil War, probably the war between the states, wasn't it?
The state of Mississippi would like to use, I hope this is the last occasion on which any state official from Mississippi uses the Civil War as an excuse for some of their wrongdoing. But they do it every time. You think, after all these years, but here they are again, and they say that the Civil War had no more to do with this. The money was converted in 1856 before the Civil War ever occurred.
Well, aren't you really asking damages for prior breaches of the trust obligation?
Absolutely not.
There's no corpus left.
That, though, is the fault of the state. And a trustee and the state officials who are acting as trustees. And where a trustee does that, the law of trust places the trustee under a very specific obligation. He's under a continuing duty, a trustee is, to pay income for the trust's intended purpose, and the purpose of this was to educate children. Where he's converted the trust corpus, the trustee has to continue paying income after the conversion. The trustee's duty to pay income continues in that it recurs annually, and each year that rolls around and he doesn't pay the income he should is another violation, and that's what we're suing to stop, these annual recurring violations.
Mr. Freeman, I'm sure Mississippi, like other states in the public school system, tests the progress of pupils periodically at different grades. Does a record in this case show the achievement test scores of the counties in the northern Virginia as compared with other rural counties in the state?
The record does not. There is a statement made in the Attorney General's brief, which is entirely outside the record, that my home county had high test scores. Well, it also happens to be the seat of the University of Mississippi, for what that's worth. It doesn't show, for example, what the records are in Mr. Papasan's home county, Tunica County, where...
Without such a showing, how can you persuade us that people in your county, the children in your county, are not receiving a minimally adequate education?
Because, Justice Powell, this case is here on a 12B6 motion, and that's our allegation.
Yeah.
And for purposes of this argument.
But you have to allege facts to support it. That's a conclusion, isn't it?
The fact that we allege is that this is the result of the denial that they're suffering.
How do you define minimum?
How do I
define minimum adequate education?
Well, let's say at the minimum it would be something that would raise the pupil above the level of a functional illiterate. And we literally have schools in Mississippi where they're being denied even that. And a lot of them are nice. Tunica County, I keep going back to that, poorest county in the whole United States, the only poor place in the whole country is the leper colony on Molokai. The point, though, of the matter is that here we're dealing with a federally created trust. We're not just dealing with appropriations of school money for the state of Mississippi. We're dealing with a trust created by the federal government. We're dealing with a trust that the state admits it's violated over these years and has continued to violate. And it comes down to this, to say that a suit such as we have here, on the basis of this continuing violation, is barred by the 11th Amendment, and that's the state's primary argument, is to say that there's no trust at all. There's no continuing duty at all, in other words. If there's a trust, there is a continuing duty. Now, of course, this court has repeatedly and recently upheld these school lands trusts in Lassen versus Arizona, Alamo Land and Cattle Company versus
Arizona. Both those cases came up through the state court system, though, didn't they?
Alamo did not.
Alamo came up through the federal court
system? Came up through the federal courts. There are other cases that the court, like United States versus Irvine, that did come up through the federal court system, where, in fact, the United States was seeking to enforce the provision of the trust, and the states were arguing there's no trust here at all.
Well, of course, the 11th Amendment is no bar to a suit by the United States against the states.
And we submit, Justice Rehnquist, the 11th Amendment is no bar to prospective injunctive relief, which tells these trustees to cease violating the terms of this trust in the future, to do your duty in the future. And that's what we're asked for here. Of course, the entire thrust of our case is not just as the trust. Assuming arguendo there is no trust, we still say that the way these schools are being financed has no rational basis whatsoever. Yes, sir. It certainly is. What's the basis for it? Well, an accident of land values is the basis, the state says. There's no land to put a value on in North Mississippi. They're trying to make a Rodriguez argument. We want to have local administration of local schools. That's the basis for it. There's no school lands trust to administer in North Mississippi. The state either gave it away or took it. Contrast this case with Rodriguez, for example. There you have a facially neutral situation. You do have a difference in land values, and it's just one section of San Antonio had a high-valued land than another. Here we have a discriminatory act, the way this money is divided up, and no basis for it. The relief that we seek, simple enough, an adjudication that the trust is valid, that is governed by federal law, that is violated annually by the respondent state officials, and that the recurring violations are in derogation of the Equal Protection Clause as well as the Contracts Clause of the Constitution. We seek prospective injunctive relief to stop these trustees from doing what they've been doing to these kids in the future, to give them a chance, and see that their schools receive the support for which the trust was created in the first place, and which is now being denied them. What we say about this trust is certainly consistent with the decisions of this court dealing with school lands trusts generally. For example, we're asking the court to apply certain common law principles to this situation, just as the court did in Oneida II. There you had a trust that was created by the Non-Intercourse Act of 1793, and the court says, well, we don't have any law to look to here. There's no regulatory scheme for enforcing the trust, so we're going to apply common law principles. These same principles apply here. We're asking this court to declare that this is, in fact, a trust, something that the court has done each and every time it's ever had an opportunity to rule on the question, and that the law governing the trust, because it's created by federal law, is, of course, federal law, and the trust is enforceable. In other words, the short answer to what we want is for the trustees to honor their obligations in the future. To argue, as the state does, that the 11th Amendment bars any such remedy for the trustees' diminution of the trust corpus is to say that there's no trust at all, contrary to the statutes which created it. that there's no enforceable continuing duty, nothing that can be enforced in federal court. That any claim under federal law would have to be left to the tender mercies of the state court. The Fifth Circuit's holding is nothing less than this trust is simply not there, because they said there is no continuing duty. Granted, says the Fifth Circuit, there was a valid compact created 130 years ago. What we're looking at now is some weird creature that has to do with Mississippi trust law, and they flatly refuse to enforce the continuing duty. And really, that's what this lawsuit's about. If this is a trust, and we certainly contend that it is, then it follows as the night to day that the trustees of this trust, and those are the people that we're suing, are obliged to honor it. And as part of that, they're obliged to pay or see that the trust's income is properly divided or paid in the future from some source. And they can be made to do that because they are acting in derogation of federal law and they are acting in derogation of the Equal Protection Clause. We submit that they can be made to do that by this court, and that indeed they should be made to do that by this court. Are there any other questions? May I reserve the rest of my time?
Mr. Arnold.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Initially, I would like to correct some misstatements by counsel as to the Choctaw Session counties, and that's the way it is referred to. There was the Choctaw Indian Tribe in basically the southern two-thirds of the state, the Chickasaw Indian Tribe in the northern one-third, relatively speaking. Every school district, and let's talk school districts and not counties, because school districts are the geographical areas. Every school district in the southern part of Mississippi in the Choctaw Session does not receive income from 16th Session lands. It's just simply not the case. For instance, the Meridian Public School System receives from 16th Section lands zero. It has no 16th Section lands. The Greenwood Municipal Separate School District, located in the Mississippi Delta, which has been referred to earlier, receives from 16th Section lands zero. It has no 16th Section lands there. There are at least 20 school districts in the southern half of the state of Mississippi which receive less than the Chickasaw Session districts. The lowest Chickasaw district receives from the state of Mississippi.
Mr. Arnold,
yes, Your Honor.
Is the state under an obligation to return the money attributable to 16th Section lands to the school district in which the 16th Section is located?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. We don't believe that the petitioners here have ever asked that the funds be returned to them in any way. And I don't believe the state would be on an obligation to make that return to them. The state had the authority.
Are they pooled then?
Yes, Your Honor.
All 16th Section lands income is pooled?
No, pardon me, Your Honor. I misunderstood your question. The 16th Section money from the leases does not come to the state. I misspoke myself. I thought you were referring to the Chickasaw Session funds being returned to the Chickasaw counties. No, Your Honor. The state does not receive those funds. Those funds are dependent upon the lease by the local school district.
My question was, is there some obligation that those monies from the 16th Section go to the school district in which the section is located?
Yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Is that a state law requirement or
ma'am,
a federal law
that
requirement?
That is a federal law requirement. I believe that's found in the Enabling Act, Land Sales Act, found in the, the Joint Appendix at page 55, section 12, where the 16th Section lands reserved in each township for the support of the schools therein, and also it's found in the 1917 Land Sales Act when Mississippi became a state, Joint Appendix 60, reserved for the schools therein.
I thought it was the counties.
No, sir. It's the individual Board of Education in that school district leases the lands and the minerals there under, Your Honor.
and it's only those school districts in which lands are located that are going to get any of the money.
Yes, sir, and the amount they get depends upon the geographical location of the school district.
I understand.
Yes.
So there could be two adjoining school districts in that part of the state. One gets some money, and the other get none.
Yes, sir, that's a fact. For instance, in the Meridian School District is located in Lauderdale County, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I believe Lauderdale County schools do get some income from 16th section lands, whereas the municipal separate school district, due to its geographical location and configuration, receives none. And also the fact, I believe the lands in Meridian, there may have been some lands located there at one time, but they were also sold. The 16th section lands were sold.
And the school district that occupied two or three townships, I suppose, would have two or three sources of this kind of income.
Yes, sir, it would if it had the 16th section lands. Yeah. Yes, sir, and they had not been previously disposed of some way. And we do have that in some of the areas of the state where there was no prohibition on the alienation of these lands under the state constitution. And the lands were sold some years ago. Other lands had been previously settled prior to the extinguishment of the Indian claims under the Spanish dominion or the French dominion and none of that. So.
What do you think governs the obligation to return that money to the school district in which it's located? Is it governed by the Schmidt case, where Justice Holmes said the obligation is just an honorary, not an enforceable one?
To return the money in the 16th, where they actually have the
land. The 16th section land.
Well, I think it could have been done another way. I think the state had the option, perhaps, to have leased all the lands that it so desired, brought the money in, and redistributed based upon some
form. And put it in a pool and redistributed it.
Yeah, I think it could have done that, but it also had the option to
So allow. Has the state made it a state law that it will not do that?
Yes, ma'am. It's in the Constitution, is Section 211.
Of the state Constitution.
Yes, ma'am. Provides for how it is done. So, as we correct a few other items here on that, there was a reference to the fact that the Delta lands were so valuable. They weren't then. It was swamp, it was overflow lands, very few roads, and $6 an acre for sale land was probably pretty good money back then. The Delta wasn't really settled and drained and roads built and railroads built in there until sometime after the 1870s.
Act on the issues raised in this case?
They seem to think, Your Honor, we think the issue come down very simple in this case. They're saying either raise the amount that's in the corpus, the principal amount, or raise the interest that's paid. That appears to us to be the issue here in this case. That is the reason for the 11th Amendment jurisdictional bar argument we've made in the district court, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and before this court. But be that as it may, they seem to think that the principal should be raised or the interest should be raised. And we think the 11th Amendment jurisdictional bar would prohibit that. If we look at who, and it's been referred to the trustees, not one single named state official and or office is a trustee of the Chickasaw Fund. Not one. Not in the Constitution, not in the state law, are they made a trustee of that fund. The legislature of the state itself has held itself to be the trustee of the Chickasaw Fund. It cannot be funded except by the legislature. The legislature is the state is the trustee of the fund. Not the governor of the state of Mississippi, not the Secretary of State.
Well, what's the Secretary of State say?
Well, he had a lot to say, I believe, Your Honor, that we somewhat opposed, but I don't believe the Secretary of State spoke to the issues in the case here. He spoke to the emotional issues of school children.
And what is his role? I thought he had a supervisory role with respect to all 16th section land.
He has a supervisory role as to the 16th section lands in the Choctaw section. That is correct. But he has no supervisory role as to the trust of the monetary trust on the Chickasaw lands. None whatsoever.
I understand. I understand that. But what is the scope of his duties with respect to the non-Chickasaw lands?
The Choctaw. His duty is to check and see two primary things. The land is not disposed of because our Constitution now, which was adopted in 1890, prohibits the sale of 16th section lands. They cannot be sold. Before that time, there was no prohibition as to the sale of these lands. One, he sees that. Two, he sees that the lands are administered in such a way that a reasonable income is derived therefrom and that they are not donated. The law in Mississippi on 16th section lands underwent a dramatic change in 1978. Up to that time, they had been very loosely administered in that regard. The legislature proposed a constitutional amendment, changed around, gave the Secretary of State much more power. The Supreme Court of Mississippi affirmed this power to go out and check on these counties and see if they were, in fact, getting the highest amount they could from the lands there. So he has that duty.
Mr. Arnold, do you agree with the statements of Mr. Freeland about the amount of money that goes per pupil for education from all sources other than these 16th section and Lew lands monies?
Your Honor, I do not agree with some of his statements there. I do not have an exact figure or percentage as to the amount. However, much like Texas had in the San Antonio versus Rodriguez case, the state of Mississippi, every child, every school district in the state, as far as an appropriation is concerned from the state of Mississippi, gets the exact same amount of money per teacher unit. There is no distinction whether it runs from Tunica County all the way to Jackson County on the opposite end of the state. This money also goes, Mr. Friend said, it didn't go for teacher salary. To the contrary, it does. The money can be used for teacher salaries, and this is separated, divided up when it goes to the schools there. Teacher salaries, superintendent and principal salaries, separate services such as salaries for art and music teachers, librarians, guidance counselors, as well as providing for nurses and lunchroom personnel, together with the funds for textbooks, audiovisual equipment, building improvements, and cost of transportation.
Mr. Arnold, could I ask a question right
there?
Yes,
Your Honor.
As I understand it, the discrepancy with regard to the trust fund income is the difference between 63 cents and $75 per pupil. And as I understand what you're saying now, the additional monies supplied by the state of Mississippi are the same per pupil, whether
yes.
it's $50 or whatever, so that the discrepancy between $75 and 63 cents, although it would be a different percentage, in absolute dollars is the same percentage after you add in the Mississippi supplemental funds. Is that right?
Based on the figures that are there, Your Honor, those figures...
Maybe they're a little off, but...
Well, they have changed substantially since 1985.
Yeah.
The state is now appropriating, July 1st of this year, it'll be $2 million, which will go to the Chickasaw Section school districts there.
But does that $2 million totally eliminate the differential, or does it just reduce it a great deal?
No, sir, I think it reduces it a great deal, yeah. But even as this money goes, and the other, I think we really have a de minimis... effect here as far as the question of a minimally adequate education. I'm not sure that I understand what it is, Your Honor, based upon the...
But on that point, I also was wondering, with regard to Justice Powell's earlier question, as I understand the Court of Appeals' opinion, they took the allegations of the complaint at face value and said that your motion dismissed was properly sustained. And don't we just really, we're talking about a lot of facts here, but aren't we pretty much confined to what they say in their complaint?
Yes, sir.
Which does make this allegation about not a minimally adequate education or whatever it is. And so and I think your argument is that even if that's all true, there's still no federal relief in that they're entitled to.
That is the position of the state, Your Honor.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering, we are really limited to the complaint itself to figure out what, for
yes,
purposes
sir.
Of our decision,
yes,
to whether it needs further.
Yes. Okay. Well-fed facts, I believe. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Not just...
The $75 per student, is that the highest that any school district gets from the 16th section land?
No, so I believe that's an average.
That's an average. But aren't there some school districts in the Choctaw area that don't get any?
Yes, sir. There's some that get absolute zero. Is
and then which is less than the Chickasaw School Districts get.
Yes, sir. That's correct. There are at least two that get zero. As I recall, I believe the Biloxi Municipal Separate School District gets substantially under $100 a year total. Mm-hmm. I mean, total amount.
From the 16th section land.
Yes, sir. I mean, we're speaking not per student or anything. We're speaking total amount of money.
I understand.
That they get it all there. Mm-hmm. And a distinction that should be made, I believe.
But what would be the, is that $75 per student, is that the average per student in the school districts that get something, or does that average out through all of the school districts?
I think that's the average per all school districts. That's taking, as I understand,
including the ones that don't get anything.
Yes, Your Honor. And, of course, that's inflated. Some school districts have vast mineral wealth under them.
Yes.
Under their 16th section lands and been able to lease that. Of course, price has been falling lately. I think these figures may change around based on some changes in the economic pattern here in the last few months or years, for that matter. Another point I'd like to make is the Chickasaw Section counties are getting an appropriation from the state, albeit only $66,000, 66% of the corpus on the trust. They're getting something that not another county or school district in the state gets. They're getting, as we say, a lanyap, something they're getting that no one else is getting there from the state. So I think that when we look at it from the standpoint that the state allows the local school districts to manage their own 16th section land subject to state oversight to make sure there's no donation of the land or disposition of the land to it's not permitted under state law under the Constitution, that there is no unequal treatment here. This Court has also said that the Equal Protection Clause is not applicable, I believe, and geographical differentials there. It's between persons, and this is a geographical differential simply because the initial action of not reserving the 16th section lands precipitated this whole lawsuit. That's what started. The 16th section lands were not reserved. Finally, some 7 years later, the state was allowed to select some lands, the governor of the state, and that's the only thing that any named official in this complaint has ever done in regard to the Chickasaw Section lands is the federal government allowed the governor to go out and select these lands in the Mississippi Delta, which was virtually unsettled at the time, as I said, swamp and overflow land. The Attorney General has never done anything in regard to these lands, nor has he been authorized to. There's been no duties imposed upon the Attorney General of the state. The mere fact that he may be a member of the Board of Education, or was at one time until the law was changed, just simply does not subject him to being enjoined in this thing. There's nothing he can do. He does not administer the trust. He can't change around. He can't invest it in some other type of investment. He can't change it around or change the interest paid. The same is true of the Secretary of State. He does not administer the trust. He no longer sits on the Board of Education. He is a member of the State Lewland Commission, and under our law, which is still in effect and under the Constitution, Lewlands can be disposed of to this day, right now. I believe there's something like 37 acres left and that nobody really wants, but you can dispose of Lewlands under state law at this time. So it's our contention, and also the Superintendent of Education. At one time, he was a member of the Board of Education. He is not anymore. He is appointed by the Board of Education. The Assistant Secretary of State, that person is basically someone there who keeps up with the state land. Where is the state land? Has it been leased? Is it coming up for renewal? And this sort of thing. These offices, and that's what's sued here, they're only sued in their official capacity, have never acquired or disposed of the Chickasaw Lew lands or handled any funds from there. In order to accomplish what the petitioners seek, here, the state of Mississippi the state of Mississippi would have to grant the relief. If there's an injunction issue, in this case, as petitioners seek, it would have to be out of the coffers of the state of Mississippi to pay this money in the future. That's where it would come from. And we submit that this would be prescribed by the 11th Amendment under the decisions of this court that start back with Hand v. Louisiana and come forward all the way through Green versus Monser, I believe, decided this term by the court. One other matter we would point out to the court at this time is that the if the court were to make the order the petitioners seek, we believe it would literally open the proverbial Pandora's box. Every school district in the Southern District of the state of Mississippi would then sue the state saying, well, another school district has got more money or more land or receives more income from theirs because of geographical variances than we do, so we'll sue and we'll get our money back or get some more money back, although we sold our land some years ago.
Mr. Arnold, what, to the extent that the plaintiff below said in the complaint, Mississippi is depriving the children in the plaintiff class of a minimally adequate education, and that's prohibited by the Equal Protection Clause. Now, just to that extent, is that barred, in your view, also by the 11th Amendment?
Your Honor, I believe
that
it would
be. That kind of a claim?
I believe it would be, as I read Plyler v. Doe and San Antonio there, what this Court has said in the past is that it's the absolute deprivation of an education that is barred by the 11th
Amendment. Assuming that what the court said was that you will apply a higher level of scrutiny if a child is denied a minimally adequate public school education, and that's alleged in the complaint, do you think the 11th Amendment absolutely bars that complaint in federal court?
If the state is the real true party in interest, Your Honor, to require the state to expend funds, perhaps it would. I think it would depend on the facts as they've evolved by the court, but in the facts that we have alleged here.
Well, I guess the facts weren't developed below, right, were they?
But as the facts are alleged here, I believe the 11th Amendment would proscribe that, would be a jurisdictional bar as far as the state of Mississippi, and it is the real party in interest in this case, we submit. The other defendants are nominal defendants only for the purpose of attempting to evade the 11th Amendment jurisdictional bar, which it would apply to the state. So I think it would in this case.
Right. Why wouldn't the San Antonio case have gone off on 11th Amendment grounds rather than the substantive equal protection decision?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't know if they raised that or not in the San Antonio case. I don't recall it in seeing if they raised the 11th Amendment as a jurisdictional bar in that case there. But the assuming arguendo that the 11th Amendment is not a jurisdictional bar in this case, there just simply has not been a cause of action stated that can survive a motion to dismiss under 12b-6. A boilerplate allegation, just boilerplate, of a deprived of a minimally adequate education, it's just not there. That's just not something I think this court or any federal court could address. The court would be continually looking
over
this.
Well, the reason it was difficult to address it, of course, is that the record that we got just didn't really reflect what other funding the state gives to pupils. That's the handicap we have.
Well, perhaps in the record, not, Your Honor, but in our brief, I believe, on page 6, we refer to the minimum program for education that the state of Mississippi provides and what those funds go to and how it goes to each school district based upon the teacher units. Perhaps I did not make it as clear as I should have to the court. But other than that, that fund going to these school districts throughout the state, the only other appropriation specifically out of the state treasury to education is the money to the Chickasaw Sessions. In that regard, I believe the figures will show, the most recent figures show in the state of Mississippi, approximately 62 or 63% in that range of the total state budget is directed to educational matters throughout the state and the public education in the state. I think this year will probably increase. There have been some increases as far as the amount the state will pay in teacher salaries to that. But we would submit to the court that the state of Mississippi is the real true party in interest in this case. They're seeking what they call an injunction, but it would require the state to expend its funds out of the state treasury here. We also submit that there is no equal protection claim based upon the allegations made in the complaint here, because to the contrary of not receiving everything that the state appropriates to every school district, the districts in the northern section of the state receive more as far as an appropriation from the state of Mississippi itself there. And the fact that one school district may be able to raise more money because the land is valuable or it has minerals under it is not an equal protection question that should be addressed by this court or any other lower federal court. Thank you.
Mr. Freeland.
Mr. Chief Justice, counsel says that there are school districts in the state of Mississippi that get no 16th section land money. That may be. I would like, though, to refer the court, if I may, to Joint Appendix 45, where the Secretary of State points out precisely how much monies are received from the trust by the various counties in the state of Mississippi. And counties and school districts, I'm using them synonymous, Justice White, because that's the way the money is divided up.
Well, are the leases made by the counties?
Under the supervision of the Secretary of State.
Well, I know, but the counties don't make the lease rental is not paid to the county, is it?
No, it's paid to the county school board as it now stands.
It's paid to school districts, isn't it?
School districts, yes, sir. That's correct.
Well, school districts are not necessarily coterminous with counties, are they? I mean, may there not be more than one school district in a county?
Absolutely. And that's the point also as to Meridian, for example. What happened with that 16th section land? It was sold, and the money is held in trust, and they get the income from the trust. So to say that they're not getting any income from 16th section land, the trust, begs the question. They still are. And our complaint is that we're not. And that's what this lawsuit is about. It's about the trust. It's not about how the state of Mississippi funds its schools around the state. They do that on more or less an equal basis, and that's another basis for our complaint, however. How is it that they can give everybody the same amount of state money and yet, acting as trustees of a trust, give us not one nickel of the trust income and say that they're treating us on any sort of rational or reasonable basis? And then they point at Rodriguez and say, well, there wasn't any discrimination in Rodriguez. Of course there wasn't. The case was tried, and that's what the trial court found, that the scheme in Rodriguez was facial and neutral. But, of course, we allege here that we're dealing with rank discrimination, and that's what the pleadings have to say. The 11th Amendment, we contend that this claim concerns only continuing violations of federal statutory and constitutional law. And it falls, therefore, within the rules permitting suits alleging conduct contrary to the supreme authority of the United States, as this court mentioned in Pennhurst. Or as said in Green versus Mansour, a recent opinion, that such prospective relief as we're looking for vindicates the authority of the United States. And that's all we ask. We ask that this trust be enforced. We don't ask the court to interfere with the way schools are funded in Mississippi.
I disagree with you that there's any trust at all. Then do you still claim that there's an equal protection violation?
I do indeed.
Even if there's no trust?
If there's no trust, precisely.
Yeah. And even if the Chickasaw counties or school districts have no claim whatsoever to any monies from 16th section lands or from Lew lands,
then what they're doing is totally irrational, because they're giving $75 or $74 a pupil in 59 counties, and at the same time they do 63 cents a pupil in the rest of the.
So I would think you would rather have us find there was no trust.
I would rather have you find that there is a trust, Your Honor, because just as the court has done.
Aren't you arguing against yourself, really?
I'm arguing that I've got a two-way street here. Not only do we have the trust, which this court has repeatedly upheld in Andrus, Lassen, Alamo Land, and Cattle, more cases than I could name, but also that this scheme that the state has set up is so totally irrational that we also have an equal protection claim, which we press.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in...